Hello, everyone, and welcome to Oh, a Podcast, the podcast about playing games and making games. Brought to you by O-Rock Studios. I'm Paul Franzen, the head boy of O-Rock Studios.
And I am Michael Gray, the head writer for O-Rock Studios.
Not the foot writer?
Nope.
Foot boy? None of that? Aww. All right. How's it going, Michael?
Fine. I've been trying to do a little bit of writing, and that's why I go for the head writer this month. But
yeah. No, that's fair. I mean, we probably should have a head writer. It might as well be you, since you've written most of the games.
Do we have any subordinate writers? Is there someone I can boss around?
Well, I guess because I offer writing support on some of your games, right? Like, I do a little bit of editing and rewrites on some of it. So, does that... Who's boss at that point, then? It's very confusing.
It depends on whether I like what you wrote or not.
Yeah. That's fair.
Otherwise, it quickly turns into, Paul changed something, Michael quickly changes it back on the next draft.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And then when we're going through editing, through whatever draft of the game, I decide I hated it and changed it all anyway.
Well, that's fun. I think with Pizza Boy, our upcoming game, I think that's the one that's gone through the most revisions of any of our games so far. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing. I think it's great that we're able to like pay such close attention to the script and really nail it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that I'll just for our readers who've been going back, you've done like the first two chapters of the game, or they're all first three?
Yes, the first two chapters are coded and pretty much ready to go at this point, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I did chapter, I played through chapter one, and then I realized some of the dialogue was awful. The FIFO dialogue, which was kind of in there because I couldn't figure out a better way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, FIFO means first in, first out. And my complaint is that, you know, when I worked at the pizza place, they wouldn't take the orders in order, if that makes sense. So Paul calls first, then Bill calls, and then Steve calls. They would take Bill's order, then Paul's order, then Steve's order. They wouldn't do it in, you know, the order the orders were received.
Was there a logic to the order? Was
no,
it just like, this pizza's the easiest? Like, this one's just plain cheese. This one's no cheese. It's just tomato. I'm going to make that one right now.
When I was cooking, you know, by myself, I would sometimes do that. I mean, there would be like one or two things which would get a pizza bumped up in the order. You know, if it was a rush order, or if somebody said they don't have much time, or, you know, something like that. It's like, okay. I need to make a cheese and a pizza with everything on it. But I generally, you know, 90% of the time, made the orders in the order they just came in. But,
sure.
I mean, whenever I worked, like, Friday night or something, the people in the kitchen just were awful about that.
Yes, I got that from the game.
What they would do is they just let the receipts just sort of, you know, pile up. So, the orders would print out on the printer in the kitchen, and I think what happens is the guy who is, you know, closest to the receipt thing would just throw down three and then throw down another three, and that's why all the orders would be mixed up and not made in the correct order.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. In any case, in the actual game itself, I wanted to make some sort of complaint along those lines, but I didn't know how to do it without saying, why don't they take the orders in order?
Yeah.
And it sounds kind of awkward to say order in order, and so... The first time around, I tried to use FIFO, first in, first out, which is sometimes a thing that businesses do. But, you know, when I played through chapter one, I realized that sounds awful. Nobody knows what FIFO is. I go and explain what FIFO is, and then it never gets mentioned ever again.
Yeah, I think we tried it, because I think we tried it a few times even before I started programming. Like, you wrote it one way, and I think you even had a note that said you didn't like this very much. So I tried to tweak it, and we went with that for a little bit. But yeah, I think, the revision you sent me most recently, I put that in the game, and it worked really well. So I think we got it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's really great. I think it's the mark of a good game that we're focusing this much on the writing and not just, you know, letting it work if it works. Like, we're really trying to make sure it's the best that it can be, and I think that's an important thing to do.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's reflected in the final product and people appreciate it. We'll see.
No, I mean, I totally agree. I like the going back and forth with the writing.
Yeah, it's fun. And it's fun for me too, because I don't get to do as much writing as I'd like to. So it helps me feel like I'm being creative when I get to go over the script and see if I have any ideas on ways to tweak it or improve it. Even if those ideas end up all getting rejected, it's still fun for me.
Yeah, I think one of them was really good. The ouch, one was great. Ouch. I loved it. And then you changed like the character's name to like Olivia.
Yes. Well, she didn't have a name in the script, and I it felt weird when I was playing the game and her name was just Girl.
Oh, I thought it was like Angry Ponytail. Okay.
No, we got rid of Angry Ponytail a few revisions ago.
Okay, because so the guy at my work, my nickname for him was Angry Man Bun, and he was just angry all the time, and he was always wearing his hair in a man bun. So that was...
Yeah, no, she was Angry Ponytail in the early version of the script, and then I forget why, but I think we got rid of that, and we got rid of like all the nicknames for people. So then she was just like Teenage Girl, and I'm like, that doesn't look right. So I just made her Olivia, but spelled really stupidly with a bunch of Y's, like O L Y Y V Y A, something like that.
I think it made it's me great laugh. Though. Yeah.
Well, because I think we have a character named Eric too, who's spelled with like two or three K's. Like I think it's funny to kind of poke fun at the weird spellings that parents sometimes give their millennial kids, or have given their millennial kids, I guess I should say.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that.
It amused me.
Okay, so, I mean, would you like to talk about Awkward Steve, or could we go more about writing?
No, whatever you want. I was going to say, it's been a pretty big month for O-Rock and for Awkward Steve specifically. So the game came out, finally, the middle of the month, on July 15th, the day before my birthday. just finally, it's done. I'm done working on it. Game I've been working on basically on my own for 2 years. And, you know, sales have been okay. They haven't been... I mean, it's the same thing with every game, right? Like, the sales are not terrible, but not exactly where I'd like them to be. That's just kind of always the story with this stuff. but the reviews are really good. Everyone likes it. I've gotten some press from decent-sized sites. I did an interview on waypoint.com with Danielle Randau, which was really cool for me because I've been listening to her podcast for like 3 years. So it was pretty exciting to get to do an interview with her. And so it seems like the people who play it like it, and everyone else is ignoring it, which is about right.
I guess the question, how do you view these games/games? Because the Awkward Steve duology is technically two games in one.
Yes. I released the first game, A Stranger Comes Calling, a couple of years ago, and I started working on a sequel, right? And I wanted to release them both on Steam. And A Stranger Comes Calling had already been greenlit for Steam, so I thought the easiest way to get them both on Steam would just be to release them together as one game on Steam, as opposed to putting the second game through Greenlight or having to pay the fee. So, I mean, that's basically it. I'm actually not really happy about it, because I thought the name A Stranger Comes Calling was a much more evocative name than the Awkward Steve duology, but...
Mm-hmm. It does have the... Yeah. Do you accept the full title? I think it's A Stranger Comes Calling, part of the Awkward Steve legacy.
That's what I was calling it originally on its release, but it's I don't consider that the full title anymore.
Does that count as a subtitle? Yeah. Because I noticed that on the title screen, it's actually got it's actually a footnote.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just being kind of goofy. There wasn't really anything to it. I think when I originally released it, like, I was sort of thinking that was the full title, but yeah, there's nothing really to it. Actually. The part where it says The Awkward Steve Legacy, I don't know if anyone ever notices that, but if you click on it, it brings you to another screen that lists a bunch of other fake games as part of The Awkward Steve Legacy.
Now I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah, it's actually, so it's kind of cool. So in the first game, they're mostly just a bunch of joke names. And in the second game, which is called Don't Turn Your Back in the Ocean, they start off as a bunch of joke names, but after you finish the game, it updates and... It gives a bunch of game names that kind of tell the story about Steve and another character that I don't want to spoil. But it kind of gives their whole story right there.
Hmm. That's I think I know which character it is, yeah.
So, oh, I'm sure you do. You played the game.
Yeah, I noticed there's a couple of changes between the game. No anxiety meter
in
the second game.
So I had been playing this Star Trek game called Star Trek Borg, right? It was an FMV game from the mid-90s. And their style of gameplay was you would watch a video and you would get to make a decision, and two of the three decisions would kill you. you could only take the one. So I thought it'd be fun to kind of play with that with an Awkward Steve title, then rather than just kind of do the same thing over and again.
Star Trek Borg.
Oh, it's pretty good, actually.
I thought
I really
you shared
it.
Pictures of that, and it was mostly Klingons.
Well, there's two of them. They're Star Trek Borg and Star Trek Klingon. They're two separate games.
Okay.
I recommend both of them, by the way.
Okay. Is 7 of 9 in the Star Trek Borg?
Maybe. I don't know what that is.
Okay, never mind. You'd probably know her. She's like the blonde bombshell character.
No, I don't recognize her. There's some really popular character in one of them. If you give me 2 seconds, I can look it up.
Worf? Maybe?
He's no,
the
Worf,
head
no.
Klingon?
No, it's not like... It was a character that I think only showed up in, like, a few episodes.
Okay, yeah, you can give me...
Who, like, existed outside of the timeline, something weird like that.
Mm-hmm.
Q? Is there a character named Q?
Yeah, that's it.
Yes, Q. Q shows up in Star Trek Borg. He's kind of the main antagonist throughout the game. And so most of the times when you die, he has something very pithy to say about it, and I really, really enjoyed that. I thought he was very funny.
Yeah, he's a funny character, I guess. I don't particularly like him, but that's just me.
He amused me. I mean, so these two games represent basically all of my experience with Star Trek. Is the FM, like, Lizzo and I watched a few episodes of the first season of the first Star Trek Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Is that the first one?
Oh, that's the last one. That's the one everybody hates.
Geez. Sorry.
That's
See,
the country
I'm
music
the, I'm
one.
I'm the opposite. I'm the opposite of a Star Trek nerd, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I have almost no experience with the Star Trek universe, but I really like that game. I thought the gameplay was simplistic, but also offered a lot of room for comedy. So I wanted to play around with that in the new Awkward Steve game. So, I mean, that's basically how the second part of the duology works out. You have a series of decisions, and if you make the wrong one, Steve dies, quote-unquote, dies in some really stupid way.
Yeah.
Like, really stupid.
Okay, so, you know, it mm-hmm. reminds me of two things. Let me write down this uh-huh. Borg note, and then...
you should actually play that for your channel. It was really good.
Star Trek Borg, yeah. No.
Yeah.
Actually, the thing about Borg, I mean, you probably know this after playing the game, but, you know, those Borg are those creepy gray machine enemies that try to kill you and stuff.
Yes.
And so, on the fourth Star Trek series... One of the producers decided, what if we have one of those evil Borg enemies, but she's a total babe? And they introduced this female Borg character who is, in fact, a total babe. And no joke, quickly becomes the best character of the entire series.
Really? I thought Borgs didn't, like, have characters. They're just, like, all, like, one weird being interconnected.
They do not, and that's why this is... Well, they take her away from the mind-sharing thing halfway. You know, they make her, like, half-human, half-Borg, if that makes any sense.
It doesn't, but that's fine. I don't understand anything.
Okay, well, let's talk about Animorphs, because...
yes, awesome.
The
okay.
Borg mindset really reminds me of the Helmicron enemies who showed up, like,
okay.
twice in...
Okay.
In Animorphs. And actually seeing Star Trek when I get older, you know, it makes me kind of sad now because it's like, oh, this is where she stole all the ideas for Animorphs.
Yeah.
Those ideas were so neat and cool. And that they were... Yeah.
Yeah, I have heard that the she and her husband were both big fans of Star Trek, and I wouldn't be surprised if that influenced a bit of the Animorphs series.
The fact that they mentioned Star Trek multiple times in the series is kind of a thing too.
Oh man, this makes me want to go on a whole Animorphs tangent. I've been listening to this Animorphs podcast recently. It's called Thoughtspeak, and they're going book by book and reviewing each one. They're getting pretty far. They're in like 30s or 40s into the ghostwritten books now. It's almost as good as Animorphs the radio drama uncensored.
That was really good.
I guess we're getting a little off topic, but hey, who cares? It's our podcast.
It's our podcast. Okay.
There is no off topic. Yeah.
The second thing I was going to mention was that the way the Awkward Steve game kind of reminded me of this one story I read. By somebody who sort of parodied it. Or I guess I don't know if he's making fun of adventure games, but really his. The story is our character is playing one of those old adventure games, and like it must be a maze or something, and they must decide to go left or right, something really mundane like that. And if you choose left, you get the you continue. If you choose right, your character dies for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That's pretty much how the gameplay in Don't Turn Your Back on the Ocean goes.
You just have to guess and hope you got the ending that doesn't lead to a death. But at least you get to restart from the place you made the decision.
Yeah, so it's so funny, actually. So the first quote-unquote review that came out of the game, it wasn't really a review. It was like a forum post that someone made. But she really didn't like that. Like, she was playing through the game, and she died a few times, and then she got frustrated and quit. And I thought that was kind of an interesting reaction, because I don't really consider the deaths to be game overs. I just consider them to be part of how you progress through the game. Like, it's not supposed to be frustrating. It's supposed to be silly, and it takes you right back to where you were, and there's not really any consequence for it. I thought that was kind of an interesting reaction. Yeah. Did the deaths bother you at all when you were playing it?
The one place threw me off where it was like permadeath and made it seem like it was permadeath.
Oh yeah.
I didn't realize that until I, replayed the game that, oh wait, if I click on the death, that doesn't let me restart. I have to hear the whole like song before.
Did you stop playing at that point?
I was doing commentary, so I was talking. I was talking, and so I didn't. The way I do the commentary is sometimes I will just stay on the decision screen while I talk for like 2 minutes straight.
Oh, sure. I'm looking forward to seeing this.
Yeah. So I didn't actually notice that there was like a timer on that one particular death.
Yeah.
Screen.
Yeah. It's just that one that exists. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I wanted to make it seem like you had died forever, and this was just the end of the game. But then it just kind of keeps going, and that was sort of my solution, was to sort of take control away from the player. Like, it has two buttons on the screen, and if you click it, it just kind of shakes and makes an angry noise at you. It's like, no, you can't do it. This is it, and then you can, and it progresses.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, but, I'm. Just getting back to that random story I was reading.
Yes.
The way the adventure game worked is that they had to make like 20 of those decisions in a row. So the person ended up having to remember the sequence, which is like left, left, right, right, left, left, right. Just this completely random sequence. And, you know, I'd been playing for hours trying to get this. And they'd come to the last decision, and they made the wrong one. They finally just had it and like threw the computer out the window, something like that.
Oh, I wonder if that's how the reviewer felt then. But see, that's why I don't like force you to go back to the beginning. That would be madness. That would be awful.
That would like, be the just, worst. Just, yes.
Yeah. Well, so actually, that's a funny thing. I think with Star Trek Borg, I'm trying to remember. It's been a few years, but I feel like you sort of have a certain number of lives. And I don't know if the game actually tells you have this many lives, but there seemed to be a point where if you died X number of times, it would revert back to the beginning. But I think it also let you save, so it didn't really end up being that big of a deal. But I definitely wanted to avoid that. Like, the last thing I want from any game I make is for it to be frustrating and annoying. So I was trying really hard to avoid that while still including the death mechanic. I mean, it's like what we did with The Beard in the Mirror. There are a few death sequences scattered throughout the game, but whenever you die, it doesn't, you know, give you a game over screen. It just puts you right back where you were. It's just like, it's more of like a joke. It's a joke mechanic, or like a storytelling mechanic, or occasionally like a puzzle. Like the death shows you that there's a puzzle there you need to pass. But it's never supposed to be a game ender. It's not supposed to make you angry.
It's Ghost Trick Phantom Detective was the one I thought was really clever with its death sequences and.
Oh yeah.
And that,
what did they do? I don't really remember.
It's basically when you die you kind of learn something which helps you solve the puzzle, so when you restart the puzzle, you won't die.
Okay.
This whole premise of the game is that you're a dead person, and so you kind of like die over and over and over again, if that makes
sense. Right, right, right. Yeah. So the other exciting thing with the Awkward Steve duology this month, besides the fact that it was finally released, I don't think I've said this on the podcast before. I've talked about it on Twitter, but I'm going to be showing Awkward Steve at the Smithsonian at a convention. I mean, you already know this, but yeah. The listening audience out there, like, it's the, when I got the email saying that Awkward Steve of all games had been accepted to this showcase at the Smithsonian, like, I literally fell on the floor laughing. It was the funniest thing in the world to me. It's such a weird, dumb game, and to be put on this sort of platform, pedestal, whatever you want to call it, like, I'm really looking forward to that. As we're recording this, it's this coming weekend, August the 5th and the 6th in D.C. at the Smithsonian American Art Museum. So if anyone listening is going to be in D.C. that weekend, come say hi. I'll be there, being awkward.
You'd be dressed like Awkward Steve.
So I tweeted out this, and it was a joke idea. I tweeted out that what if everyone who's on my team for the Smithsonian convention, what if we all were wearing the pug shirts that Steve wears? Like, I'm going to have three other people there. What if we were all wearing the shirts? And then one of the people organizing it emailed me and was like, so actually that's a really good idea. Like, they, but no, I can't do it. The game hasn't made enough money for me to justify buying the $25 shirts for everybody to wear. But I actually am planning to wear the shirt with like a nice like button shirt on top of it, kind of unbuttoned so you can see the pug shirt, but it's not like the focus, but it'll be there.
You'll be showing up with an unbuttoned shirt at the Smithsonian.
Hey, they told me to wear pug shirts, man. This is a step up fashion-wise. It'll be a nice button shirt. But yeah, so that's happening. It's weird, and I'm really looking forward to it. I also still have to work on how to describe to people what this game is, so that's going to be interesting, because I still don't know.
It's a video game of life and love.
I mean, I'm toying with phrases like an interactive film. It's a game about a person trying to exist and trying to interact with other people in a normal and healthy way. You know, phrases like that. I have a week to figure it out, I guess. So yeah, that's it. That's Awkward Steve's big month. What have you been up to?
I have been trying to write rewrite the Internet Lawyer game. Our Internet Court.
Oh, excellent. Oh, good. That's the game I want to work on next. Good.
And so I've been running into problems with Internet Court. I guess I should give some background. So with Internet Court,
yes, yes.
I wrote... I wrote this game when I was working at the IRS. And so... let me see. It's sort of like Phoenix Wright, basically, except it's Internet-themed, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And it's full-motion video.
Yeah. So, you know, I had a couple ideas that I wanted to... you know, to implement to make sure it's not Phoenix Wright. Number one, I realized we had to have like a prosecutor as the main character, simply because all the other Phoenix Wright style games all feature defense attorneys like Aviary Attorney or Rogeria Hope. So So it's like, no, we've got to have a prosecutor as the main character. Mm-hmm. And basically, I wrote these various cases separately. I think I wrote them in different weeks or so. And the way I wrote it was I had a bunch of placeholder names like A, B, C, D, E, F. We go all the way up to J. And rereading it now, I think I kind of mixed up which character was which because I didn't give them actual names.
Pretty funny.
And so I think I accidentally ended up making myself like the main character in every single case. So right now I'm trying to figure out what I could do to change the characters around, because I play a joke character I basically was planning on having myself be the joke character and have Diana Gray be the main character.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, but the way I think it's gotten written here is that I somehow I got the characters mixed up in case number two, and so I accidentally turned myself into the main character.
So what are you going to do to change it? Are you going
to
change it?
I'm trying to figure out what I can do to change it.
Yeah,
I think
there
are a couple things which I can keep and a couple things which I can change, if that makes sense.
Sure, sure.
So I was planning on doing a thing with, you know, spoiler alerts, but... trying to get my wife and the baby together in one scene. I figured that would be really cool because we have a baby. And then trying to get me and Mary, I guess, together in one scene because, you know, she exists. So I don't think there's any other point in the game where there would be two characters on screen at the same time. And so I'm trying to work around the, you know, I want to keep those two shots, although we could always change it in editing and say Mary is Diana's daughter, although that would be, I don't know. Would it make more sense to have the 8-year-old be my daughter or Diana's daughter? She doesn't really look like either of us because she's not the daughter of either of us. So...
Yeah, I mean, it would... Yeah.
Yeah, so the way I have it now is that, you know, in case number one, Diana's the defense... Nope. Case number one, I'm the goofy, like, defense attorney who's a joke. That was sort of part of my idea of making it less like Phoenix Wright, where the defense attorney's a joke and the prosecutor's kind of the real person here.
Sure, sure, sure.
But case number two goes into their tragic backstory, and like I said, I kind of forgot which character was which. We have a different prosecutor and a different a defense attorney in the second case, and that's sort of what screwed me up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you know, I forgot that this character will grow up to become our main prosecutor or will grow up to become our main defender, and I got those mixed up. And so at this point, I'm trying to fix it and figure out a way to get that.
It sounds like we got to start coming up with names for these characters. Maybe that would help keep things straight.
Yeah, coming up with names would help. With case number one, I think we went with the names... The placeholder names I came up with, what was it? Don't Stop Defending, Super Lawyer 64, and Judge Doodles.
That's right, because so this, for the listening audience, this game implies a world where all court cases basically take place on Skype. And so everyone's kind of using, instead of their real life names, their usernames, their internet names.
Yeah, so the we have a prosecutor and a defendant. See, this was a question I had. I mean, this is what comes into problems with coming up with character names. We'd have to pick... Maybe we'd have to pick genders and ages or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, case number one, I just named them after Babysitter's Club characters. Instead of Christy Thomas
of
and Marianne Spear, it's Christy Spear and Marianne Thomas. And
of course.
And they're these two... They're the two slash, like, you know, teenage-age girls who are just fighting with each other over, she unfriended me on Facebook and I really don't like it.
That's right, I like that case.
And I wasn't sure whether or not to use the word Facebook, so we never use the word Facebook anywhere, but it's quite obvious they're talking about Facebook and being unfriended.
And we could come up with a fake name, and we could use Flitter again, like we've used a couple times now.
Yeah, and they came up with, at one point they argue about a TV show, and I originally used names from Twilight, but, I switched to various boys in the Babysitter's Club series, Bart and I switched their boyfriends around too. So now Christy is dating Marianne's boyfriend, and Marianne likes Christy's boyfriend. And dumb jokes that nobody's going to like. But yeah, no. My main problem right now is A, coming up with names for various characters, and B. I need to switch things around so I'm not the main character, which is fine.
Sure.
So I need to come up with a different motive for the culprit, I guess. Because originally the culprit was, again, spoilers. I guess it's not spoilers if we're talking about changing it.
Yeah, and this game's not coming out for forever, so people will forget it
but
anyway.
But my wife was going to play Jennifer, who was angry with me because I stood her up at prom. I mean, I can read this here. It's like, Jennifer, yes, it's me, Harry, the girl you stood up at prom. But I told you, I couldn't go because there's a last-minute emergency. My mom had to be rushed to the hospital. That's no excuse. but I didn't have a driver's license, and without mom to take us, blah, blah, blah. I was embarrassed beyond relief. And when you turned down my friend invitation, it brought back all those old feelings. Only now I had a new feeling. Revenge! I wanted revenge on you for ruining your life.
This game.
And so I need to come up with, I guess, with a new reason why my wife would want to destroy Diana forever if we're making Diana the main character.
Right, yeah.
But that's what basically what I did was I went through the first case of the lawyer game. I punched it up. I came up with new names, fixed some of the writing, you know, tried to delete some of the unnecessary things because it's an FMV game. I guess we want it to be as short as possible, or at least delete some unnecessary lines.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah.
And then I got to case number two and then realized the horrible mistake I made with switching the characters around. And so now I probably will probably have to go back and switch characters around for case number one just to make it fit.
Well, good luck. It sounds like you have quite a project ahead of you.
Yeah.
But that's fine. I think it'll be a little while, I think, still before I'm able to kind of move into production on my end. I was thinking I would slot this game in once we finish the Francie Drew and Friends collection, which, you know, I don't want to put a date on it, but it should be in the next, you know, few months, I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all pretty close to being ready to go. We can talk about that a little bit if you want, or if you have more stuff to talk about with Internet Court.
Let's talk about Fancy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Francie, sorry.
Francie, the Francie Drew and Friends collection. Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't really have any big updates since last month. The games are still pretty much mostly done. I think I've gotten a lot of feedback from you, and I've been able to incorporate that.
Yeah, I did that. I finally got around to doing feedback. Now I need to do feedback with, chapter number two of Pizza Delivery Boy.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, I've been talking for months and months about and trying to figure out how I want to release these games, but I think I'm settling on I want to release the Francie Drew and Friends collection as a whole, as a collection on Steam, and then release them individually on Itch.io, and that way if people don't want to pay for the entire collection, they can kind of pick and choose the ones they want, but we can still, you know, have a big bundle on Steam. And that way, too, on Steam, like, because now I have to pay $100 out of pocket for every game we want to release on Steam, which is not great.
Mm-hmm.
This way, I can just pay for the one for the collection instead of paying $100 per game.
That would be much better. And what we could actually do, another thing we could do.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. I know that Sherlock Holmes game I have is available on Itch.io for, what, like 54 cents?
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be, I think it'd be... You know, if we include that with the version of, you know, the game on Steam, this is a little bonus, if that makes any sense. I don't know if that makes any sense.
So, are there still, like, legal issues with Sherlock Holmes?
Nope.
Are you sure? Because I'm going to put my foot down. I don't want to get sued. I don't want to be sued by the Sherlock Holmes estate.
Yeah, nope, not...
I would have to do some independent research to feel comfortable with that.
Okay.
Because I remember Choice of Games turned it down for that reason. So I would need. I know you said that the trademark has changed since that was an issue.
Oh
but,
yeah. Wait. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me double check this.
I think that's what you had said before, right?
There's an article from Variety saying, "Yep, it." Supreme Court declined the case in November of 2014. The weird thing is, okay, so here's how it works. The Sherlock Holmes, he wrote like four books, and three of them were written before 1923, so those are all in the public domain. The fourth one was not, and so people are wondering, what do you do when most of the series is a public domain? So the estate obviously likes getting money, and they are arguing that as long as any part of Sherlock Holmes is under copyright, all of it is. And that was the case that got thrown out by the Supreme Court.
Oh man! All right, I'll keep looking, but I'm very hesitant to wade into that. I need to see if the pros outweigh the cons of me being very nervous about it.
Yeah.
And whether it add enough value to the package to make me feel better about it.
Yeah, the good news is that I don't know if it's good news, but the first, I mean, all the cases I did were from the first book. Clearly, I mean, I picked the ones from stories that are directly from the public domain book.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll look into it a little more, but I'm kind of leaning toward it just being the set of the visual novels. I think that's a pretty clean set too. Yeah, I'll keep thinking about it. But yeah, I'm hoping to have that all wrapped up in the next few months, and then I can start like really jumping in on a new project for us. So it'll be Internet Court. That's the one I'm most interested in. That's what I would like to start on. So I can start looking into the script myself a little more. We can start thinking about reaching out to people to cast. We can start figuring out the logistics of filming and or getting the recorded footage. Because I had an idea that it would be really interesting if like all the actors for a case, like we could actually all get together in a video chat and Skype and record it live like that. We might get more natural reactions that way. but I have no idea if that would even be like technologically possible to be able to do that and record it and everything. And it would be, you know, a lot of people we'd have to get together to make it work. So it would probably make more sense for everyone just to record their parts individually, but we might get a better performance if we're able to do it on Skype.
Yeah. I just wouldn't know how to do that, which is, I mean, I don't know how I'd be able to record. I don't really have an HD recorer besides my iPhone, and so I'd probably need my wife to record it. And your wife gets to play with Dr. Nom Noms this week?
I just tweeted about that, yeah.
That's not fair. I want to be with Dr. Nom Noms.
My wife's visiting our friend Heather this weekend, and Heather is the owner of the cat who portrayed Dr. Nom Noms in Cat President. So she's hanging out with Dr. Nom Noms as we speak, a.k.a. Cosmo, the cat's real name.
I would never be able to call this cat by its real name. It's clearly Dr. Nom Noms,
right?
To me.
Well, I can't think of Luna as anything but Rover, your quote cat.
She looks totally different now, which helps.
Oh, okay.
She got a palm cut, and so now she looks like a completely different dog, which... You know, that's just how dogs are, so...
Oh, man, I want a dog. Someday. What were we talking about before I started thinking about dogs?
Recording the entire thing on Skype.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would all probably be easier to get everyone to record themselves. Oh, I was going to say, so you said you need to get a HD camera, but I think we don't really need HD cameras. Like, I think that's sort of the beauty of this project, is that the way the court system works is that everyone's just filming on like a webcam or a phone. Like, everyone's just Skyping into the courtroom. So like all the characters in this universe would have different cameras. They'd have different setups, and they wouldn't all necessarily be high quality. You know, I mean, it's like how, the in Who Am I, right? Like, that was just like his character was a guy behind a computer recording a Let's Play video. Like, there's no reason it has to be particularly high quality. That's the beauty of the project.
But then that led to the problem with the one scene where I had to, I guess, I wouldn't say re-record, but grow my hair out to re-portray that character so I could take pictures.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because Diana's picture quality was way better than mine.
Well, we have plenty of time to figure out how we're going to do that, but I'm very happy to hear that you're jumping back into the script, because that is the next project I want to take on after Francie Drew. It's the one I'm really excited about.
Yeah, and let me see. I haven't touched the escape room art at all.
Oh,
so.
That's okay. Because then escape room probably wouldn't have a chance to move into my schedule until after we finish Pizza Boy, which is going to be a little while still. So.
Yeah, let me see. Right. Did we ever decide on what version of the empty room we liked best? For the background.
I don't remember.
I'll just send them both to you and we could decide. Yeah. Problem is this, you know, I got help for those who are listening. I got help from somebody to help me with the artwork for this game, and they've got like a professional version of Photoshop, and I just have the free one. and so I can't really have the super fancy. I mean, they've been trying to send me a copy of, like, here's the file so you can change whatever you want. And, like, nope.
Oh, but you can't open the file?
I can't open the file and see all the layers and everything. So basically what happens when I open the file is it's like, layer number one, can't do it. Layer number... it says layer number two. It's like, continue, yes, no. And I was like, okay, yes. Layer number two, can't do it.
Oh, well, maybe by the time we can really add the game to our schedule, maybe we'll be able to hire an artist to take care of it instead of trying to figure it out ourselves. Maybe that's the best approach. I'm not sure.
We actually did get a wall texture, and the wall texture looks great.
Okay, well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, I think what we're just waiting on is for figuring out what the background's going to look like, and we've got three or four different variations of the background, so it's right. No big deal. I'll just resend it, I guess.
Okay.
Or just Facebook ask. I don't know. I think we also, yeah. I think we didn't get any comments, but let's talk real quickly about this weird mom game that you threw my way.
I didn't really have anything behind it. I just tweeted. I was talking with my friend and old neighbor, Christina, on Twitter about really nothing in particular. And she, you know, told a story about something goofy her mom said, and then she said that should be your next game, about weird moms. And it kind of got me thinking, like, the idea of a cool dad has kind of become a meme lately. There's a whole big dating sim that everyone's talking about
everyone's
about hot dads.
Talking about it.
Right?
I can't believe
Wait, what's it called?
Dream Daddy.
Yeah.
And it was like, why isn't everybody talking about Cat President?
Oh, I'll tell you why. It's because Dream Daddy is made, isn't it made by like the Game Grumps or one of those people?
I gotta be honest, never heard of the Game Grumps. I can't even say their name. I've never heard of these people before, but apparently they're popular.
A thing. I don't know anything about them. I know they're a thing, and I think all the cool college kids in Game Cola watch the Game Grumps. I think they're a pretty popular thing.
Oh, they like Let's Play twice a day. Okay.
Yeah.
And they started.
I mean, it's a good concept, a dating sim about hot dads, and combine that with a very well-known YouTuber, I guess. Very well-known streamer with YouTubers.
3.9 million subscribers and over 3 billion total views.
Yeah. So
yeah, these guys are pretty big. Okay.
So I think you need to up your subscriber count, man. Get more popular, and then we'll sell more games.
I am never going to break 40,000 subscribers. I've been, like, wavering in that time. Basically forever.
But yeah, so dads are in right now, but I think moms are going to be the next big thing. So a game, and maybe a dating sim, maybe not. I think my friend Christina expressed dismay at the idea of it being a dating sim, so maybe not that. But a visual novel about weird moms, I think, could have some potential.
Yeah, so I'm wondering what... I just... floated these ideas around. I just emailed you this, but let's talk about it anyway.
Sure.
Let's see. Mary thought it would be fun if, you know, there's the mom's club and the president has to retire because her kid's going off to college, which...
Yeah, I was kind of into
idea. Wow, that's a complicated premise for a second grader to come up with, actually.
I didn't know that was her idea. Oh, that's even better.
That was 100% her. She's like, wait, no, the president of the mom's club has to retire because her kid's going off to college, and they need to figure out who the replacement's going to be.
She might be the new head writer of All Rock Studios. You have some competition now.
Well, she came up with that idea after my wife said, okay, we need to have a debate with the moms over which type of parenting technique is best. And I'm like, why would they be debating?
Great.
And Mary just automatically jumped presidential competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe like these mom group, PTA, whatever, meetings, maybe they like anchor each of the chapters, right? Like each chapter is kind of building up to the next like weekly or monthly meeting. And then that's like the main event of that chapter. something like that.
Yeah, how many chapters would it be? How long does this go on?
Depends on what the story is and how many chapters it needs.
I don't know what the story is. I was just thinking of it in more like Babysitter's Club, where each chapter is like a different storyline. Treat each chapter like a different book.
Oh, that could be too, yeah, absolutely. And would it be like, you know, Cat President, where we follow all these different storylines, or would it be more like Pizza Boy, where it's one big storyline that's a lot more linear?
That is the question. Yeah,
Yeah, right?
The way Babysitter's Club works is more like, it's a lot more like Animorphs, where it's like each book has a different main character. And so I'd probably do something like, well, if we've got these five crazy moms, each mom gets like two chapters. I think anything like larger than that would be crazy.
Yeah. Well, it could be like Internet Court, where each chapter kind of follows a different main character. Or yeah, like Animorphs books, whatever.
Yeah, Animorphs books. I never quite understood why Animorphs and the Babysitter's Club. You know, they have ghost writers, but the Ghost Riders just kind of switch characters, if that makes sense. I think it's like, well, get this one Ghost Rider. If you've got like five Ghost Riders and five main characters, assign a Ghost Rider to each main character. It's like Ghost Rider number one only writes Jake books.
Yeah.
Ghost Rider two.
That's something the Thought Speak podcast they complain about, is how the characterizations, the personalities of the characters kind of start to get a little wibbly wobbly when the Ghost Riders take over. They don't quite gel with how the personalities were originally written.
That's 100% what happens with the Babysitter's Club. So Christy becomes like, you know, the tomboy who would never wear makeup, even though, you know, in the past she's worn dresses and makeup, and we just pretend that didn't happen.
How do they do it in, you've been reading some Boxcar Children book, right? Does each, they don't like switch main characters, right? Like each book kind of follows everybody, right?
I haven't read any of the Boxcar Children books. I've only read one of the ghost written Boxcar Children books.
Okay.
The way the series progresses is that the series basically becomes the Benny and Grandpa show, and the other characters sort of fade into the background. But I mean, that's just the author, you know, going towards the character they found most interesting, the youngest kid and Grandpa.
I think I said this already, but you gotta read the one, the mystery of I forget what it's called, but the mystery of the computer game, where it's a whole mystery centered around secrets in like an adventure game. It's like by Sierra or LucasArts. It's so good.
I have to, but my review series for Boxcar Children has been put on hold.
Did nobody watch them?
Nobody watched them. Some people watched them, I think. I'll take a look and see how many views were. So you think if I was as popular as Game Grumps with my 3.9 million subscribers, you think people would be watching my Boxcar Children reviews more often?
Yes, you need to get popular to the point where people will just watch whatever video you put out, right? Yeah. I don't know how you do that.
Moderately popular. Okay, so let's see. Last thing I put up was Boxcar Children number 10. I did this in January. 10 and 11 I put up reviews in January. It's 459 views and 735 views, which I guess is not bad, but...
The Mystery in the Computer Game, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Released in 2000. I'm going to guess that's not by the original author.
Nope.
It's number 78, so you have a while to get before you get to it.
Yeah, and as the series goes on, the girls become less important and just kind of, yeah, it's sad.
Well, I feel like, I think there was like an adopted child in this one too, though. Like, there was some character I'd never heard of that was another kid.
Aww.
And I was like, I don't know where this kid came from. Let me just read you this description real quick. I know we're getting close to the end of the podcast, but... During a visit to a computer game company, the Aldens meet the designers of their favorite game, Ringmaster. When the designers learn that Aldens are Ringmaster experts, they ask for their help. Would the Aldens test the new version of their game before it's sent to stores? The Aldens gladly agree, but soon, the characters in Ringmaster 2 are given the Aldens strange clues about people and places in real life. Is someone using the computer game to tell them something is wrong? The Boxcar Children are determined to find out. That's so good! Oh, that's so good. Oh, can we get the Boxcar Children license just so we can make a game about this book?
I know, I don't think so.
A computer game about people finding real life clues in a computer game. Oh man.
It would be great. Yeah.
Oh, it would, yeah, fit with the meta style that we've kind of hit with Who Am I in games like that.
I'm just wondering if anybody's going to like Who Am I or is going to like it. I played a little bit and my wife saw it and she was so fascinated. But then I offered her the idea, hey, do you want to test it out? Play it yourself? No, no.
Yeah, I mean, as one of the developers, as the programmer, I think it's my favorite one in the Francie Drew and Friends collection. Like, I'm really into it. I think it's a great idea, great concept. And
it's interesting.
And I love your acting. Diana's acting. You guys both nailed it.
The character art is also kind of interesting because, seventh or eighth grade, sometime in middle school, you know, I tried drawing a comic strip and I wanted the main character to basically be me, semi-autobiographical, except I didn't have any cool adventures, so it was basically me with fictional, I don't know. It's sort of like a playoff of Foxtrot, which is a comic strip I really liked. So I kind of did that where the little boy is the main character, and I was a middle school boy at the time. And so the character in Who Am I just redid the artwork style I did. That was middle school Michael's version of himself. Middle school Michael thought he looked like that. And so... the Arglefump character, the one that looks more modern, is basically just me again. Me now trying, what would I look like? I still have no idea how to draw my hair.
Yeah. No, I really like, and I really like too that, like, there's this whole theme where the Arglefump character who comes to life, like, it's based on a photo you took years ago at a wedding when you looked nice, and it was like comparing what that character would look like versus what the character looks like in real life. All really neat stuff in that game. I agree. I'm really interested to see what people are going to make of it. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be the sleeper hit of the series.
Yay.
But we'll see. So we didn't get any questions on Twitter this week. I was a little too late in sending out the call, so nobody had a chance to send anything out. So should we start wrapping up?
Okay. Yeah, let's wrap this up.
All right. So I think that's about it for this episode. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Paul M. Franzen, and Michael is at Arglefump, spelled exactly as it sounds.
Is that why I don't have subscribers? Nobody can spell my name?
Okay, let me spell it out for you.
It's Arglefump the Nancy Drew Dude. I added a subtitle so people could search for me. Just look for the Nancy Drew Dude. Hopefully I'm one of the... I'm actually going to Google that, Nancy Drew Dude, to see if I come up as... Okay, I do come up.
Ah, oh, man, you have like four times as many followers as me on Twitter. Can you get your followers to follow me, please? 2,500 Twitter followers. Man, I only have like 700. Oh, no, I'm not going to tell people how it's spelled. I'm angry now. Arglefump, if you want to follow Michael on Twitter or check out his videos on YouTube. He's going to have a really good one out of the Awkward Steve duology pretty soon. So everyone go watch that.
What? There's a YouTube wiki and I'm featured on it.
What? Breaking news.
And there's a picture of me with at OMSI wearing my Dwayne The Rock Johnson shirt.
Oh my gosh, look at this. Oh man, oh, this is weird. Has stuff about your sister and all too.
Gray is married to his wife Katie and a baby daughter named Rosie and a stepdaughter named Mary. He also has a younger sister named Molly. That is very borderline creepy.
Huh. That picture is great. That picture is really good. Where did they even get that? Was that in your blog?
I don't know where that came from. I think I tweeted it. I've got to fix this and give myself a real picture. Male YouTubers that joined in 2007.
That's a good category. Oh, this is... Okay. I need to finish the closing now.
Sorry.
Our newest game is the Awkward Steve Duology. As we talked about before, you can buy it on Steam or itch.io. Please check it out. If you want to come see me showing off the Awkward Steve Duology at the Smithsonian, that's happening this weekend, August 5th through the 6th, at the Smithsonian American Art Museum. And there's one other thing I wanted to plug before I let you go. Michael and I were recently guests on the Game Cola podcast, reading a bad fan fiction called Luigi and Daisy's Unhappy Vacation, I think it was. Mm-hmm. I was the narrator, and Michael played Luigi in, and his voice for that is fantastic. You have to listen to it.
Hey, everybody! I can do a real Italian accent, but it's so much easier to do one that's obviously fake.
And the person who did the editing for that podcast too, Joseph Martin. Like, have you listened to the final version yet, Michael?
I have not, actually.
Oh, it's so good. He added music and sound, and like, there's this part where I reference "Hey, Dude," and like, very, very faintly in the background, he put like a strain of the "Hey, Dude" theme song, like, and it's he put background music everywhere. It's he just did a phenomenal job, way better than I ever do editing any podcasts, including this one. I was super impressed by that. So anyway, go check that out, gamecola.net. The podcast is called Hacks and Slash. It's a whole podcast about reading weird fan fiction. Highly recommended. Our theme song is Dead Monster by March of the Danger Men. You can check them out on SoundCloud. And if you have any questions about game development or our games specifically, we would love to hear them. Email them to podcast@oarock.com. And is there anything you'd like to add, Michael?
No, I don't think I have anything right now.
All right, and check out Michael's videos. Arglefumph, ArgleFumph, the Nancy Drew dude. He's got some good stuff.
Yeah, I need to find. It's like I've got to desperately find a picture of me that is not awful.
It's a great picture. I don't know what you mean.
My hair is sticking out to the right, like some sort of weird. I've got like a curl, whatever.
Thanks for listening, everyone. See you later.
Bye. They link to my Patreon page. Nobody's Patreon.
You have a Patreon page?
I find it hilarious. I started one up because somebody said they'd totally do it, and they just totally backed out. And so I just keep it up there.
Just in
case.
It's
like $0 patrons, $0 a month.
Oh, I'm surprised. Yeah, I thought you'd be getting some money from this. You should promote it again. I guess.
I think... I find it more enjoyable to not promote it and have nobody sign up and still complain about my Patreon.
Oh.